I fell in love with you, and I committed to you, because I wanted to spend the rest of my life with you. That's all I cared about when I said my vows. But I'm starting to realize that maybe you didn't marry me for the same reasons.
That's not fair, I say quietly.
He can't insinuate that I wouldn't have married him if I'd known he couldn't have kids. And he can't say he still would have married me if he'd had that knowledge prior to our marriage. A person can't confidently proclaim what they would have done or how they would have felt in a situation they've never been in. Graham stands up and walks to the kitchen. He grabs a bottle of water out of the fridge, and I sit silently as he drinks it. I wait for him to come back to the table to continue the conversation, because I'm not ready to speak again. I need to know everything he's feeling before I decide what to say. What to do. When he takes his seat again, he reaches across the table and puts his hand over mine. He looks at me sincerely.
I will never put a single ounce of blame on you for what I did. I kissed someone who wasn't you, and that was my fault. But that's only one issue out of a dozen issues we have in this marriage, and they are not all my fault. I can't help you when I don't know what's going on in your head.
He pulls my hand closer and cradles it between both of his.
I know that I have put you through hell these past few weeks, and I am so, so sorry for that. More than you know. But if you can forgive me for putting you through the worst thing imaginable, then I know we can get through the rest of it. I know we can.
He's looking at me with so much hope in his expression. I guess that's easy to do when he honestly believes him kissing someone else is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. If I weren't so outraged, I would laugh. I pull my hand away from him. I stand up. I try to suck in a breath, but I had no idea anger settled in the lungs. When I'm finally able to respond to him, I do it slowly and quietly, because if there's anything I need for Graham to understand, it's everything I'm about to say. I lean forward and press my palms against the table, staring directly at him.
The fact that you think what you did with that woman was the worst thing that could possibly happen to me proves that you have no idea what I've been through. You have no idea what it's like to experience infertility. Because you aren't experiencing infertility, Graham. I am. Don't get that confused. You can fuck another woman and make a baby. I can't fuck another man and make a baby.
I push off the table and spin around. I planned to take a moment and gather my thoughts, but apparently I don't need a moment, because I immediately turn and face him again.
And I loved making love to you, Graham. It's not you I didn't want. It was the agony that came afterward. Your infidelity is a walk in the park compared to what I experienced month after month every time we had sex, and it led to nothing but an orgasm. An orgasm! Big fucking deal! How was I supposed to admit that to you? There was no way I could admit that I grew to despise every hug and every kiss and every touch, because all of it would lead to the worst day of my life every 28 fucking days.
I push past the chair and walk away from the table.
Fuck you and your affair. I don't give a fuck about your affair, Graham.
I walk into the kitchen as soon as I'm finished. I don't even want to look at him right now. It's the most honest I've ever been, and I'm scared of what it did to him. I'm also scared that I don't care what it did to him. I don't even know why I'm arguing issues that are irrelevant. I can't get pregnant now, no matter how much we fight about the past. I pour myself a glass of water and sip from it while I calm down. A few silent moments go by before Graham moves from the table. He walks into the kitchen and leans against the counter in front of me, crossing his feet at the ankles. When I work up the courage to look at his eyes, I'm surprised to see a calmness in them. Even after the harsh words that just left my mouth, he somehow still looks at me like he doesn't absolutely hate me. We stare at each other, both of us dry-eyed and full of years' worth of things we should never have kept bottled up. Despite his calmness and his lack of animosity, he looks deflated by everything I just yelled at him, like my words were safety pins, poking holes in him, letting all the air out. I can tell by the exhaustion in his expression that he's given up again. I don't blame him. Why keep fighting for someone who is no longer fighting for you? Graham closes his eyes and grips the bridge of his nose with two fingers. He cycles through a calming breath before folding both arms over his chest. He shakes his head like he's finally come to a realization that he never wanted to come to.
No matter how hard I try, no matter how much I love you, I can't be the one thing you've always wanted me to be, Quinn. I will never be a father.
A tear immediately falls from my eye, and then another, but I remain stoic as he steps toward me.
If this is what our marriage is, if this is all it will ever be, just me and you, will that be enough? Am I enough for you, Quinn?
I'm confounded, speechless. I stare at him in utter disbelief, unable to answer him. Not because I can't. I know the answer to his question. I've always known the answer. But I stay silent because I'm not sure I should answer him. The silence that lingers between his question and my answer creates the biggest misunderstanding our marriage has ever seen. Graham's jaw hardens. His eyes harden. Everything, even his heart, hardens. He looks away from me because my silence means something different to him than what it means to me. He walks out of the kitchen toward the guest room, probably to get his suitcase and leave again. It takes everything in me not to run after him and beg him to stay. I want to fall to my knees and tell him that if on our wedding day someone had forced me to choose between the possibility of having children or spending a life with Graham, I would have chosen life with him. Without a doubt, I would have chosen him. I can't believe our marriage has come to this point, the point where my behavior has convinced Graham that he's not enough for me. He is enough for me. The problem is, he could be so much more without me. I blow out a shaky breath and turn around, pressing my palms into the counter. The agony of knowing what I'm doing to him makes my entire body tremble. When he emerges from the hallway, he's not holding his suitcase, he's holding something else. The box. He brought our box with him? He walks into the kitchen and sets it beside me on the counter.
If you don't tell me to stop, we're opening it.
I lean forward and press my arms into the counter, my face against my arms. I don't tell him to stop, though. All I can do is cry. It's the kind of cry I've experienced in my dreams. The cries that hurt so much you can't even make a sound.
Quinn, he pleads with a shaky voice.
I squeeze my eyes shut even harder.
Quinn.
He whispers my name like it's his final plea. When I still refuse to ask him to stop, I hear him move the box closer to me. I hear him insert the key into the lock. I hear him pull the lock off, but instead of it clinking against the counter, it crashes against the kitchen wall. He is so angry right now.
Look at me.
I shake my head. I don't want to look at him. I don't want to remember what it felt like when we closed that box together all those years ago. He slides his hand through my hair and leans down, bringing his lips to my ear.
This box won't open itself, and I sure as hell am not going to be the one to do it.
His hand leaves my hair, and his lips leave my ear. He slides the box over until it's touching my arm. There have only been a handful of times I've cried this hard in my life. Three of those times were when the IVF rounds didn't take. One of those times was the night I found out Graham kissed another woman. One of those times was when I found out I had a hysterectomy. Out of all the times I've cried this hard, Graham has held me every single time, even when the tears were because of him. This time feels so much harder. I don't know if I'm strong enough to face this kind of devastation on my own. As if he knows this, I feel his arms slide around me. His loving, caring, selfless arms pull me to him, and even though we're on opposite sides of this war, he refuses to pick up his weapons. My face is now pressed against his chest, and I am so broken. So broken. I try to still the war inside me, but all I hear are the same sentences that have been repeating over and over in my head since the moment I first heard them. You would make such a great father, Graham.
I know. It devastates me that it still hasn't happened yet.
I press a kiss to Graham's chest and whisper a silent promise against his heart. Someday it'll happen for you, Graham. Someday
You'll understand. I pull away from his chest. I open the box. We finally end the dance. Chapter 27. Then. It's been 5 hours since we said I do on a secluded beach, in the presence of two strangers we met just minutes before our vows, and I don't have a single regret. Not one. I don't regret agreeing to spend the weekend with Graham at the beach house. I don't regret getting married 5 months before we planned to. I don't regret texting my mother when it was over, thanking her for her help, but letting her know it's no longer needed because we're already married. And I don't regret that instead of a fancy dinner at the Douglas Wimberley Plaza, Graham and I grilled hot dogs over the fire pit and ate cookies for dessert. I don't think I'll ever regret any of this. Something so perfect could never become a regret. Graham opens the sliding glass door and walks onto the balcony. It was too cold to sit up here when we were here 3 months ago, but it's perfect tonight. A cool breeze is coming off the water, blowing my hair just enough to keep it out of my face. Graham takes a seat next to me, tugging me toward him. I snuggle against him. Graham leans forward slightly and places his phone next to mine on the railing in front of us. He's been inside breaking the news to his mother that there won't be a wedding. Is your mother upset? I ask.
She's pretending to be happy for us, but I can tell she would have liked to have been there.
Do you feel guilty?
He laughs. Not at all. She's been through two weddings with two of my sisters, and she's in the middle of planning the last one's wedding. I'm sure a huge part of her is relieved. It's my sisters I'm worried about.
I didn't even think about them. I texted Ava on the way here yesterday, but I think she's the only one who knew. Ava and all three of Graham's sisters were going to be bridesmaids in the wedding. We had just told them last week. What did they say?
I haven't told them yet, he says. I'm sure I won't have to because $10 says my mother is on the phone with all three of them right now.
I'm sure they'll be happy for you. Besides, they met my mother on Easter Sunday. They'll understand why we ended up doing it this way. My phone pings. Graham reaches forward and grabs it for me. He naturally glances at it as he's handing it to me. When I see the text is from my mom, I try to pull the phone from him, but it's too late. He pulls it back to him and finishes reading the text.
What is she talking about?
I read the text and feel panic wash over me. It's nothing. Please just let it go, Graham. I can tell he isn't, because he urges me to sit up and look at him.
Why did she text you that?
I look down at my phone again, at her terrible text. You think he jumped the gun because he was so excited to marry you? Wake up, Quinn. It was the perfect way for him to avoid signing.
Sign what? Graham asks.
I press my hand against his heart and try to find the words, but they're somehow even harder to find tonight than they have been the last 3 months I've avoided talking about it. She's talking about a prenuptial agreement.
For what? Graham says. I can already hear the offense in his tone.
She's concerned my stepfather has changed the will to add me to it. Or maybe he already has, I don't know. It would make more sense, since she's been wanting me to talk to you about it so bad.
Why haven't you?
I was going to. It's just, I don't feel like I need to, Graham. I know that's not why you're marrying me. And even if my mother's husband does leave me money in the future, I don't care that it would go to both of us. Graham hooks his thumb under my chin.
First, you're right. I don't give a damn about your bank account. Second, your mother is mean to you and it makes me angry. But as mean as she speaks to you sometimes, she's right. You shouldn't have married me without a prenup. I don't know why you never talked to me about it. I would have signed one without question. I'm an accountant, Quinn. It's the smart thing to do when assets are involved.
I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting him to agree with her. Oh. Well, I should have brought it up to you then. I didn't think the conversation would be this easy.
I'm your husband.
My goal is to make things easier on you, not more difficult.
He kisses me, but the kiss is interrupted by my phone going off. It's another text from my mother. Before I can finish reading it, Graham takes the phone from me. He types out a text to her.
Graham agreed to sign a postnup. Have your lawyer draft it up. Problem solved.
He sets the phone on the railing, and similar to the first night we met, he pushes the phone over the edge of the balcony. Before my phone lands in the bushes below, Graham's phone receives an incoming text, and then another, and another.
Your sisters.
Graham leans forward and gives his phone a shove, too. When we hear it land in the bushes below, we both laugh.
Much better, he says. He stands up and reaches for my hand. Come on. I have a present for you.
I grab his hand and jump up with excitement. Really? A wedding present? He pulls me behind him, walking me into the bedroom.
Have a seat, he says, motioning to the bed. I'll be right back.
I hop onto the center of the bed and wait giddily for him to get back with the gift. It's the first gift I've ever received from my husband, so I'm making a way bigger deal out of it than it probably needs to be. I don't know when he would have had time to buy me something. We didn't know we were getting married until half an hour before we came here. Graham walks back into the room holding a wooden box. I don't know if the box is my present or if there's something inside of it, but the box itself is so beautiful I wouldn't mind if the actual box was my present. It's a dark mahogany wood, and it looks hand-carved with intricate detailing on the top of the lid.
Did you make this?
A few years ago, he says. I used to build stuff in my father's garage. I like working with wood.
I didn't know that about you.
Graham smiles at me.
Side effect of marrying someone you've known less than a year.
He takes a seat across from me on the bed. He won't stop smiling, which excites me even more. He doesn't hand me the present, though. He opens the lid and pulls something out of the box. It's familiar. An envelope with his name on it.
You know what this is?
I take the envelope from him. The last time we were at this beach house, Graham asked me to write him a love letter. As soon as we got home, I spent an entire evening writing him this letter. I even sprayed it with my perfume and slipped a nude pic in the envelope before I sealed it. After I gave it to him, I wondered why he never mentioned it again. But I got so caught up in the wedding, I forgot about it. I flip over the envelope and see that it's never even been opened. Why haven't you opened it? He pulls another envelope out of the box, but he doesn't answer me. This one is a larger envelope with my name on it. I grab it from him, more excited for a love letter than I've ever been in my life. You wrote me one too?
First love letter I've ever written, he says. I think it's a decent first attempt.
I grin and use my finger to start to tear open the flap, but Graham snatches it out of my hands before I can get it open.
You can't read it yet.
He holds the letter against his chest like I might fight him for it.
Why not?
Because, he says, putting both envelopes back in the box, it's not time.
You wrote me a letter I'm not allowed to read?
Graham appears to be enjoying this.
You have to wait. We're locking this box, and we're saving it to open on our 25th wedding anniversary.
He grabs a lock that goes to the box, and he slides it through the attached loop.
Graham, I say, laughing, this is like the worst gift ever. You gave me 25 years of torment.
He laughs. As frustrating as the gift is, it's also one of the sweetest things he's ever done. I lift up onto my knees and lean forward, wrapping my arms around his neck.
I'm kind of mad I don't get to read your letter yet, I whisper, but it's a really beautiful gift. You really are the sweetest man I know, Mr. Wells.
He kisses the tip of my nose.
I'm glad you like it, Mrs. Wells.
I kiss him and then sit back down on the bed. I run my hand over the top of the box.
I'm sad you won't see my picture for another 25 years. It required a lot of flexibility.
Graham arches an eyebrow.
Flexibility, huh?
I grin. I look down at the box, wondering what his letter to me says.
I can't believe I have to wait 25 years.
There's no way around the wait.
The only time we're allowed to open this box before our 25th anniversary is if it's an emergency.
What kind of emergency? Like, death?
He shakes his head. No, a relationship emergency. Like, divorce.
Divorce? I hate that word. Seriously?
I don't see us needing to open this box for any other reason than to celebrate our longevity, Quinn. But if one of us ever decides we want a divorce, if we've reached the point where we think that's the only answer, we have to promise not to go through with it until we open this box and read these letters. Maybe reminding each other of how we felt when we closed the box will help change our minds if we ever need to open it early.
So, this box isn't just a keepsake. It's also a marriage survival kit.
Graham shrugs. You could say that. But we have nothing to worry about. I'm confident we won't need to open this box for another 25 years.
I'm more than confident, I say. I would bet on it. But if I lose and we get divorced, I won't have enough money to pay out on our bet because you never signed a prenup.
Graham winks at me. You shouldn't have married a gold digger.
Do I still have time to change my mind?
Graham clicks the lock shut. Too late. I already locked it. He picks up the key to the lock and walks the box to the dresser. I'll tape the key to the bottom of it tomorrow, so we'll never lose it, he says. He walks around the bed to get closer to me. He grabs me by the waist and lifts me off the bed, throwing me over his shoulder. He carries me over the patio threshold and back outside to the balcony, where he slides me down his body as he sits on the swing. I'm straddling his lap now, holding his face in my hands.
That was a really sweet gift, I whisper. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I didn't get you a gift. I didn't know I was getting married today, so I didn't have time to shop.
Graham slides my hair over my shoulder and presses his lips against the skin of my neck. I can't think of a single gift in the world I would push you off my lap for.
What if I bought you a huge flat-screen TV? I bet you'd push me off your lap for a flat-screen.
He laughs against my neck. Nope.
His hand slides up my stomach until he's cupping my breast. What about a new car?
He slowly drags his lips up my throat. When his mouth reaches mine, he whispers, "Hell no," against my lips. He tries to kiss me, but I pull back just enough.
What if I bought you one of those fancy calculators that cost, like, 2 grand?
I bet you'd push me off your lap for math.
Graham slides his hands down my back.
Not even for math.
His tongue pushes between my lips, and he kisses me with such assurance my head starts to spin. And for the next half hour, that's all we do. We make out like teenagers on the outdoor balcony.
Graham eventually stands up, holding me against him without breaking our kiss.
He carries me inside and lays me down on the bed. He turns out the light and pushes the sliding glass door all the way open so we can hear the waves as they crash against the shore.
When he returns to the bed, he pulls off my clothes one piece at a time, ripping my shirt in the process.
He kisses his way down my neck and down my throat, all the way to my thighs, giving attention to every single part of me.
When he finally makes it back to my mouth, he tastes like me. I roll him onto his back and return the favor until I taste like him.
When he spreads my legs and connects us, it feels different and new because it's the first time we've made love as husband and wife.
He's still inside me when the first ray of sun begins to peek out from the ocean.
Chapter 28. Now. Graham does nothing after I open the box. He just stands next to me in silence as I grab the envelope with his name on it. I slide it to him and look back down in the box. I lift the envelope with my name on it, assuming it would be the only thing left inside the box, since all we put in it before closing it were these 2 letters. But beneath our 2 letters, there are a few more letters, all addressed to me, with dates on them. He's been adding letters. I look up at him, silently questioning him.
There were things I needed to say that you never really wanted to hear.
He grabs his envelope and walks out the back door onto Ava and Reed's back porch. I take the box to the guest bedroom and close the door. I sit alone on the bed, holding the only envelope from him that I expected to find in the box, the one from our wedding night. He wrote the date in the top right corner of the envelope. I open the other envelopes and I pile the pages on top of each other in the order they were written. I'm too scared to read any of it. Too scared not to. When we locked this box all those years ago, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that we wouldn't need to open it before our 25th wedding anniversary. But that was back before reality set in. Back before we knew that our dream of having kids would never come true. Back before we knew that the more time that passed, and the more devastating moments I experienced, and the more Graham made love to me, that it would all start to hurt. My hands are shaking as I press the pages to the blanket, smoothing them out. I lift the first page and begin to read it. I don't think I'm prepared for this. I don't think anyone who gets married for the right reasons ever expects this moment to come. I stiffen, like I'm bracing myself for impact as I begin to read. Dear Quinn, I thought I would have more time to prepare this letter. We aren't supposed to get married yet, so this gift is all very last minute. I'm not even that great of a writer, so I'm not sure I'm even going to be able to convey what I need to say to you in words. I'm better with numbers, but I don't want to bore you with a bunch of math equations, like me plus you equals infinity. If you think that's cheesy, you're lucky you met me later in life, rather than when I was in junior high. When I was in seventh grade, I concocted a love poem that I was going to write down and give to my first girlfriend. Thank God it was years later before I actually got my first girlfriend. By then, I realized what a bad idea it was to rhyme a love poem with the periodic table of elements. However, I'm so comfortable in my masculinity around you, I think this is the perfect time to finally put that periodic table of elements love poem to use. Because yes, I still remember it. Some of it. Hey girl, you're looking mighty fine. Feels like I'm breathing iodine. Your smile gets all up in my head. Feels so heavy like I'm dragging lead. Your skin is smooth. It looks so sleek. It's like someone dipped you in zinc. Kissing you would never get old. Marry me, girl. I'll flank you in gold. That's right. You're the lucky girl who gets to marry the author of that poem today. Good thing it'll be 25 years before you read it, because as soon as we're married this afternoon, I'm never letting you out of this marriage. I'm like, Hotel California. You can love Graham anytime you like, but you can never leave. The minister will be here in 2 hours. You're upstairs getting ready for our wedding as I write this letter. On our way here yesterday, we stopped at a bridal store, and you made me wait in the car while you ran inside to pick out a wedding dress. When you got back to the car with the dress hidden inside of a garment bag, you couldn't stop laughing. You said the ladies who were helping you thought you were insane, buying a dress just a day before your wedding. You said they gasped when you told them you're a procrastinator and that you still haven't picked out a groom. I can't wait to see what you look like walking down that aisle of sand. It'll just be you in your dress on a beach with no decorations, no guests, no fanfare, and the entire ocean will be our backdrop. But let's just pray none of your dream from last night comes true. This morning when you woke up, I asked what I had missed while you were sleeping. You told me you had a dream that we were getting married on the beach, but right before we said, I do, a tsunami came and washed us away. But we didn't die. We both turned into aquatic killers. You were a shark, and I was a whale. And we were still in love, even though you were a fish and I was a mammal. You said the rest of your dream was just us trying to love one another in an ocean full of creatures who didn't approve of our interspecies relationship. That's probably my favorite dream of yours to date. I'm sitting out here on the patio, writing the love letter I thought I had 5 more months to write. Part of me is a little nervous, because, like I said, I've never been much of a writer. My imagination isn't as wild as yours, as evidenced by the things you dream about. but writing a letter to you about how much I love you should come pretty easily, so hopefully this letter and this gift to you will serve its purpose. Honestly, Quinn, I don't even know where to start. I guess the beginning is the most obvious choice, right? I could begin by talking about the day we met in the hallway. The day I realized that maybe my life was thrown off course because fate had something even better in store for me. But instead, I'm going to talk about the day we didn't meet. This will probably come as a surprise to you because you don't remember it. Or maybe you do have a memory of it, but you just didn't realize it was me. It was a few months before we met in the hallway. Ethan's father held a Christmas party for their employees, and I was Sasha's date. You were Ethan's date. And while I will admit I was still wrapped up in all things Sasha at the time, something about you was engraved in my memory after that night. We hadn't been formally introduced, but you were just a few feet away, and I knew who you were because Sasha had pointed you and Ethan out a few minutes before. She said Ethan was in line to be her next boss, and you were in line to be his wife. You were wearing a black dress with black heels. Your hair was up in a tight bun, and I overheard you joking with someone about how you looked just like the caterers. They all wore black, and the girls had their hair styled the same way as yours. I don't know if the catering team was short-handed that night, but I remember seeing someone walk up to you and ask for a refill on his champagne. Rather than correct him, you just walked behind the bar and refilled his champagne. You then took the bottle and started refilling other people's glasses. When you finally made it over to me and Sasha, Ethan walked up and asked what you were doing. You told him you were refilling drinks like it was no big deal, but he didn't like it. I could tell by the look on his face that it embarrassed him. He told you to put down the champagne bottle because there was someone he wanted you to meet. He walked off, and I'll never forget what you did next. You turned to me, and you rolled your eyes with a laugh, then held up the champagne bottle and offered me a refill. I smiled at you and held out my glass. You refilled Sasha's glass and proceeded to offer refills to other guests until the bottle was finally empty. I don't remember much else about that night. It was a mundane party, and Sasha was in a bad mood most of the time, so we left early. And to be honest, I didn't think about you much after that. Not until the day I saw you again in the hallway. When you stepped off the elevator and walked toward Ethan's door, I should have been filled with nothing but absolute dread and disgust over what was happening inside Ethan's apartment. But for a brief moment, I felt myself wanting to smile when I laid eyes on you. Seeing you reminded me of the party and how easygoing you were. I liked how you didn't care if people thought you were a caterer or the girlfriend of the Ethan Van Kemp. And it wasn't until the moment you joined me in the hallway, when your presence somehow brought me to the brink of smiling during the worst moment of my life, that I knew everything would be fine. I knew that my inevitable breakup with Sasha wasn't going to break me. I don't know why I never told you that. Maybe because I liked the idea of us meeting in a hallway under the same circumstances. Or maybe because I was worried you wouldn't remember that night at the party or refilling my glass of champagne. Because why would you? That moment held no significance. Until it did. I would write more about our meeting in the hallway, but you know all about it. Or maybe I could write more about the first night we made love, or the fact that once we finally reconnected, we never wanted to spend a single second apart. Or I could write about the day I proposed to you, and you so stupidly agreed to spend the rest of your life with a man who couldn't possibly give you all that you deserve in this world. But I don't really want to talk about any of that, because you were there for all of it. Besides, I'm almost positive your love letter to me details every minute of us falling in love, so I'd hate to waste my letter on repeating something you more than likely put into words more eloquently than I ever could. I guess that means I'm left with talking about the future. If all goes as planned, you'll be reading this letter on our 25th wedding anniversary. You might cry a few tears and smear the ink a little, then you'll lean over and kiss me, and we'll make love. But if for some reason you're opening this box because our marriage didn't work out how we thought it would, let me first tell you how sorry I am. Because I know we wouldn't read these letters early unless we did absolutely everything we could to prevent it. I don't know if you'll remember this, but we had a conversation once. I think it was only the second night we spent together. You mentioned how all marriages have Category 5 moments, and how you didn't think your previous relationship would have made it through those moments. I think about that sometimes. About what could make one couple survive a Category 5 moment, but a different couple might not. I've thought about it enough to come up with a possible reason. Hurricanes aren't a constant threat to coastal towns. There are more days with great weather and perfect beach days than there are hurricanes. Marriages are similar, in that there are a lot of great days with no arguments, when both people are filled with so much love for each other. But then you have the threatening weather days. There might only be a few a year, but they can do enough damage that it takes years to repair. Some of the coastal towns will be prepared for the bad weather days. They'll save their best resources and most of their energy so that they'll be stocked up and prepared for the aftermath. But some towns won't be as prepared. They'll put all their resources into the good weather days in hopes that the severe weather will never come. It's the lazier choice, and the choice with greater consequences. I think that's the difference in the marriages that survive and the marriages that don't. Some people think the focus in a marriage should be put on all the perfect days. They love as much and as hard as they can when everything is going right. But if a person gives all of themselves in the good times, hoping the bad times never come, there may not be enough resources or energy left to withstand those Category 5 moments. I know without a doubt that we're going to have so many good moments. No matter what life throws at us, we're going to make great memories together, Quinn. That's a given. But we're also going to have bad days, and sad days, and days that test our resolve. Those are the days I want you to feel the absolute weight of my love for you. I promise that I will love you more during the storms than I will love you during the perfect days. I promise to love you more when you're hurting than when you're happy. I promise to love you more when we're poor than when we're swimming in riches. I promise to love you more when you're crying than when you're laughing. I promise to love you more when you're sick than when you're healthy. I promise to love you more when you hate me than when you love me. And I promise, I swear, that I love you more as you read this letter than I did when I wrote it. I can't wait to spend the rest of my life with you. I can't wait to shine light on all your perfects. I love you so much. Graham. Dear Quinn, I'm going to start this letter off with a little apology. I'm sorry I opened the box again. I'm sorry I needed to write another letter, but I feel like you'll appreciate it more than you'll be upset about it. Okay, now for math. I know you hate math, but I love it, and I need to math for you. It's been exactly 1 year to the day since we decided to start a family, which means there have been approximately 365 days between that day and this one. Of those 365 days, we have had sex an average of about 200 days, roughly 4 nights a week. Of those 200 days, you were ovulating only 25% of the time, about 50 days. But the chances of a woman getting pregnant while they ovulate is only 20%. That's 10 days out of 50. Therefore, by my calculations, out of the total 365 days that have passed between the day we first started trying and today, only 10 of those days counted. 10 is nothing. It's almost like we just started trying. I'm only writing this down because I can tell you're starting to get worried. And I know by the time you read this letter on our 25th anniversary, we'll probably be just a few years away from being grandparents, and none of this math will even be relevant. But just as I want you to remember the perfect days, I feel like I should probably talk a little about our not-so-perfect days, too. You're asleep on the couch right now. Your feet are in my lap, and every now and then your whole body jerks, like you're jumping in your dream. I keep trying to write you this letter, but your feet keep knocking my arm, making the pen slide off the page. If my handwriting is shit, it's your fault. You never fall asleep on the couch. But it's been a long night. Your mother had another one of her fancy charity events. This one was actually kind of fun. It was casino-themed, and they had all kinds of tables set up where you could gamble. Of course, it was for charity, so you can't really win,
but it was better than a lot of the stuffier events where we have to sit at tables with people we don't like and listen to speeches from people who do nothing but brag on themselves. The night was fine, but I noticed pretty early on that you were getting drained from the questions. It's just harmless, casual conversation, but sometimes that casual conversation can be really tiresome. Hurtful, even. I listened, over and over, as people would ask you when we were going to have a baby. Sometimes people just naturally assume pregnancy follows a marriage. But people don't think about the questions they ask others, and they don't realize how many times someone has already been forced to answer their question. The first few times you were asked, you just smiled and said we just started trying. But by the fifth or sixth time, your smile was becoming more forced. I started answering for you, but even then I could see in your eyes that the questions were painful. I just wanted to get you out of there. Tonight was the first time I could see your sadness. You're always so hopeful and positive about it, even when you're worried. But tonight, you seemed like you were over it. Like maybe tonight is going to be the last event we'll ever attend until we actually do have a baby in our arms. But I get it. I'm tired of the questions, too. It's breaking me seeing you so sad. I feel so ineffectual. I hate it. I hate not being in control of this. I hate not being able to fix this for you. But even though we've been trying for over a year, I have hope. It'll happen someday. It'll just have to happen a different way than we thought it would. Hell, I don't even know why I'm writing about this, because you'll be a mother when you read this letter. 5 times over, maybe. I guess I'm just processing all of it. And we have so much to be grateful for. You love your job. I tolerate mine. After work, we get to spend our evenings together. We make love all the time, and we laugh a lot. Life is perfect, really. Of course, there's the one element of you getting pregnant that we hope makes life even better, but that will come with time. And honestly, the longer it takes, we might even appreciate it a little more. Gratitude is born in the struggle, and we have definitely struggled. Our niece Adeline is beautiful and happy, and she likes you way more than she likes me. Caroline agreed to let her sleep over last year, and it hasn't stopped. And you look so forward to when we get to keep her. I think it has made me fall a little more in love with you. I know how much it hurts that we haven't had a baby of our own yet, but seeing how genuinely happy you are for my sister and her family reaffirms just how selfless you are. You don't equate our struggles with their success, and it makes me love that strength about you. You're still asleep on the couch, but you're snoring now, and I need to stop writing this letter so I can go find my phone and record it. You argue with me and tell me you don't snore, so I'm about to get the proof. I love you, Quinn, and even though the tone of this letter was kind of depressing, the strength of my love for you is at its greatest. This isn't a Category 5 moment, maybe more of a Category 2, but I promise you I am loving you harder this year than any year that came before it. I love you so much. Graham. Dear Quinn, I would apologize for opening the box yet again, but I have a feeling it's going to happen again. Sometimes you don't want to talk about the things that make you sad, but I feel like someday you'll want to know my thoughts. Especially this year. It's been our toughest yet. We've been married for more than 5 years now. I don't want to dwell on it too much because I feel like it's all our life has become, but in the last few years, nothing has been successful as far as our fertility issues are concerned. We went through 3 rounds of IVF before calling it quits. We would have gone a 4th round, despite the doctor advising against it, but we just couldn't afford it. There are a lot of things I want to document during this marriage, Quinn, but the devastation following each of those failed attempts is not one of them. I'm sure you remember how hard it was for both of us, so there's no point in detailing it. You know how I always ask you about your dreams? I think I'm going to stop doing that for a while. Last Sunday when you woke up, I asked you what I missed while you were sleeping. You stared at me with this blank look in your eyes. You were silent for a little while, and I thought you were trying to figure out how to relay your dream, but then your chin started to quiver. When you couldn't stop it, you pressed your face into your pillow and you started to cry. God, Quinn,
I felt so guilty. I just put my arm around you and held you until you stopped crying. I didn't push you to talk about what your dream was because I didn't want you to have to think about it again. I don't know if you dreamt that you were pregnant or that we had a baby, but whatever it was something that devastated you when you woke up and realized it was merely a dream. It's been 6 days since that happened, and I haven't asked you about your dreams since that morning. I just don't want to put you through that again. Hopefully one day we'll get back to that, but I promise I won't ask you again until you finally are a mother. It's tough. I know when we got married we didn't expect to face these kinds of hurdles together. And honestly, Quinn, I try to carry you over them, but you're so damn independent. You try not to cry in front of me. You force your smiles and your laughter, and you pretend to still be hopeful, but it's changing you. It's making you sad and filling you with guilt. I know you sometimes feel bad because you think you're taking away my opportunity to be a father, but I don't care about that. If you tell me today that you want to stop trying for a baby, I'll be relieved, because that would mean you might stop being sad. I'm only going through this fertility process with you because I know you want to be a mother more than anything. I would walk through fire to see you happy. I'd give up everything I have to see a genuine smile on your face. If we had to forego sex forever, I would. Hell, I'd even give up cheese to see you finally get your dream of becoming a mother. And you know how much I love cheese. I would never tell you this, because I know part of you would take it the wrong way, but I think my favorite moments in the past year are all the moments when we aren't home. When we go out with our friends or visit our parents, I've noticed when we're home, you become a little more withdrawn when I touch you or kiss you. It used to be that we couldn't keep our hands off each other, but something changed earlier this year. And I know it's only because sex has become so clinical between us that it's starting to feel routine to you. Maybe even a little painful, because it never leads to what you hope it leads to. Sometimes when we're alone and I kiss you, you don't kiss me back like you used to. You don't turn away, but you barely reciprocate. You tend to enjoy me more when you know a kiss has to stop at a kiss. In public, you reciprocate and you lean on me. And I know it's a subtle difference, but there's a difference. I think our friends think we're the most affectionate couple they know because we always have our hands all over each other. They probably imagine our private life is even more affectionate. But it's actually our private life that has stalled. And I am not complaining, Quinn. I didn't marry you just for the good years. I didn't marry you just for the amazing chemistry we have. And I'd be foolish to think our marriage could last an eternity without a few tough moments. So, while this year has been our toughest yet, I know one thing with complete certainty. I love you more this year than any year that came before it. I know I sometimes get frustrated. Sometimes I miss when we made love on a whim rather than on a schedule. But I ask that even in the times I get frustrated, please remember that I'm only human. And as much as I promise to be your pillar of strength for as long as you need one, I'm sure I will sometimes fail you. My whole purpose in life is to make you happy, and sometimes I feel like I'm unable to do that anymore. Sometimes I give up on myself. But I just pray that you don't give up on me, too. I love you, Quinn. I hope this is the last depressing letter I ever write to you. My hope is that next year, my letter will be full of good news. Until then, I will continue to love you more and more with every struggle we face than I loved you when all was perfect. Graham. P.S. I don't know why I only vent about the stressful stuff. So much good has happened in the last couple of years. We bought a house with a big backyard, and we spent the first 2 days christening every room. You got a promotion a few months ago. Now you only have to go into the office 1 or 2 days a week. You do most of the writing for the advertising firm from home, which you love. And we've talked about the possibility of me opening my own accounting firm. I'm working on a business plan for that. And Caroline gave us another niece. All good things, Quinn. So many good things. Dear Quinn, we've been trying. Trying to have a baby. Trying to adopt a baby. Trying to pretend we're okay,
trying to hide from each other when we cry. It's all our marriage has become, a whole lot of trying and not much succeeding. I truly believed we could make it through all the Category 5s we faced, but I think this year has been a Category 6. As much as I hope I'm wrong, and as much as I don't want to admit it, I have a feeling we'll be opening this box soon, which is why I'm on a flight to your sister's house right now as I write this letter. I'm still fighting for something I don't even know that you still want me to fight for. I know I failed you, Quinn. Maybe it was self-sabotage, or maybe I'm not the man I thought I could be for you. Either way, I am so disappointed in myself. I love you so much more than my actions have shown, and I could spend this whole letter telling you how sorry I am. I could write an entire novel that's nothing more than an apology, and it still wouldn't detail my regret. I don't know why I did what I did. I can't even explain it, even when I tried to tell you about it that night in the car. It's hard to put into words, because I'm still trying to process it. I didn't do it because of some intense attraction I couldn't fight. I didn't do it because I missed having sex with you. And even though I tried to convince myself that I was doing it because she reminded me of you, I know how stupid that sounds. I never should have said that to you. You're right. In a way, it sounded like I was blaming you, and that was never my intention. You had nothing to do with what I did. I don't want to talk about it, but I need to. You can skip this part of the letter if you don't want to read it, but I need to work through it, and for some reason, writing about things in these letters always seems to help sort through my thoughts. I know I should be better at communicating them, but I know you don't always want to hear them. I think the way I've been feeling started during a moment I had at my sister's house. I guess you could say it was an epiphany, but that sounds like such a positive word for what I was feeling. It was the day we were supposed to meet our new nephew, but you said you got stuck in traffic. I know that was a lie, Quinn. I know, because when I was leaving Caroline's house, I saw the gift we bought her in the living room. Which means you had been there at some point during my visit, but for whatever reason, you didn't want me to know. I thought about it during my whole drive home after leaving her house, and the only thing I can think of that would make you not want to admit you were there is if you saw me standing in Caroline's living room holding Caleb. And if you saw that, you might have heard what Caroline said to me, and what I said to her in return, about how I was devastated I still hadn't become a father yet. As much as I wish I could take that away, I can't, but I do need you to know why I said it. I couldn't stop staring at him as I held him, because he kind of looks like me. I had never held the girls when they were that young, so Caleb was the tiniest human I had ever held. And it made me wonder, had you been there, what would that have made you feel? Would you have been proud seeing me with my nephew, or would you have been disappointed that you would never see me holding a newborn of our own like that? I think Caroline saw the look on my face while I was holding him, and thought I was looking at him with such intensity because I wanted one of my own. But I was actually looking at him and wondering if you would continue to love me if I never became the one thing you wished I could be. I know Caroline was merely complimenting me when she said I'd make a good father, but the reason I said I was devastated it still hadn't happened yet is because I was devastated for you. For our future. Because it wasn't until that moment that I realized I might never be enough for you. Not long after that, I was walking out of my sister's house and saw the gift and knew you had been there. I didn't want to go home. I didn't want to confront you because I was afraid you might confirm my fears, so I drove around aimlessly. Later that night, when I got home, you asked if I got to hold Caleb. I lied to you because I wanted to see your reaction to my lie. I was hoping maybe I was wrong and you weren't actually at my sister's house. Maybe the gift was from someone else, and it was just similar to the one we had bought. But as soon as I saw your reaction, I knew you had been there. And because you were hiding it, I knew you must have overheard our conversation, which meant you also saw me holding Caleb. I was worried that the image of me holding a newborn like I was a father would be stuck in your head, and it would make you sad every time you looked at me, and I wasn't a father. You would realize that the only way to get those images out of your head is if I were out of your life, for good. I've worried about a lot of things since we got married, but I don't think I've ever worried about us until after that moment.
I've been fighting for so long to be the strength you need, but that was the first time it occurred to me that I may not be what brings you strength anymore. What if I'm part of what brings you pain? I wanted you to call me out for lying to you. I wanted you to scream at me for telling Caroline I was devastated I wasn't a father yet. I wanted something from you, Quinn. Anything. But you keep all your thoughts and feelings bottled up so tight, it's becoming impossible to read you anymore. But you aren't the only one who is impossible to read anymore. I should have been honest with you about it that night. The moment I knew you had been to Caroline's, I should have said so. But somewhere between our wedding day and today, I lost my courage. I became too scared to hear what you truly feel inside that head and heart of yours, so I've done my share of keeping it just below the surface. If I didn't press you to talk about it, I would never have to confront the possibility that our marriage was in trouble. Confrontation leads to action. Avoidance leads to inaction. I have been an inactive husband for the past few years, and I am so sorry for that. The night I lied to you about holding Caleb, I remember you walking to your office. It was the first moment I ever had the thought that we might need a divorce. I didn't have that thought because I wasn't happy with you. I had that thought because I felt I was no longer making you happy. I felt like my presence was bringing you down, causing you to sink further and further into yourself. I walked to the living room and sat down on the couch, wondering if new possibilities would open up for you if I left you. Maybe if you weren't tied to me, somewhere down the line you could meet a man who already had children. You could fall in love with him and be a stepmother to his children and have some semblance of happiness brought back into your life. I broke down, Quinn, right there in our living room. It's the moment I realized that I was no longer bringing you happiness. I had become one of the many things adding to your pain. I think that's been the case for a while now, but for some reason I wasn't able to recognize it until recently. And even then, it took me a while before I finally allowed myself to believe it. I felt like I had failed you. But even knowing that, I never would have made the decision to leave you. I knew that about myself. Even if I believed that you might be happier after I left, I was too selfish to give that to you. I knew what it would do to me if I left you, and that terrified me. My fear of not having you in my life sometimes overpowered my desire to see you happy. I think that's why I did what I did, because I knew I would never be selfless enough to leave you. I allowed myself to do something completely out of character for me, because if I felt I was no longer worthy of you, it would be easier to convince myself that you deserved better. It's so fucked up. I don't even know how it got to this point. I can't look back on our marriage and pinpoint the day that my love for you became something you resented and not something you cherished. I used to believe if you loved someone enough, that love could withstand anything. As long as two people remained in love, then nothing could tear them apart, not even tragedy. But now I realize that tragedy can tear down even the strongest of things. You could have one of the greatest singing voices of all time, but one injury to the throat could end your entire career. You could be the fastest runner in the world, but one back injury could change all of that. You could be the most intelligent professor at Harvard, but one stroke could send you into early retirement. You could love your wife more than any man has ever loved a wife, but one harrowing battle with infertility could turn a couple's love into resentment. But even after years of tragedy wearing us down, I refuse to give in just yet. I don't know if flying to Europe with the box we closed on our wedding night will make it better or worse. I don't know that a grandiose gesture will convince you of how incomplete my life is without you. But I can't go another day without trying to prove to you how inconsequential children are when it comes to the fate of my future with you. I don't need children, Quinn. I only need you. I don't know how I can stress that enough. But even still, no matter how content I am with this life, it doesn't mean you are content with yours. When I get to Europe, a final decision will be made, and I have a feeling I'm not going to want to agree to that decision. If I could avoid the conversation with you forever, just to keep you from deciding to open the box, I would. But that's where we went wrong. We stopped talking about all the things that should never have been silenced. I have no idea what's best for us anymore. I want to be with you, but I don't want to be with you when my presence causes you so much pain. So much has changed between us in the time